Welcome to Insight Analog Photography Radio Program. I'm your host, Scott Shepard, and of course, the Insight Analog Photography Radio Program is all about traditional process photography. We talk about instant photography. We talk about black and white. We talk about color film. We talk about dry plate, wet plate, you name it, alternate printing processes, everything going on in analog photography. And of course, the Insight Analog Photography Radio Program is brought to you by Fujifilm over at www.fujifilmusa.com/professional. They have beautiful C41 color neg, black and white, color chrome, and of course, instant. Instant film rocks. These guys have so much great things going on right now with instant film. Of course, they have the pack film in 3.25 by 4.25 and 4.5. Color, black and white, high-speed black and white. But you know what's even cooler? They have the Instex cameras and film. The Instex Wide is in the country, available everywhere. And of course, right now, brand new, the Instex Mini is now in the U.S. They have cameras. They have film. This Instex Mini is 2.5 by 3.5. It's the size of a business card. This is really fun stuff. You got to check it out. www.fujifilmusa.com/professional, making life more colorful. Our friends at Richard Photo Lab, the place to send all your film to get developed, proofs, you name it. They got a great workflow going. www.richardphotolab.com. DR5 for the most unbelievable proprietary process to turn your black and white film into positives, into chrome. You won't believe until you get your film back as a piece of chrome will blow your mind. The dynamic range, the latitude, it's just unbelievable stuff. Definitely check it out. www.dr5.com. Iger Studios, Lenny Iger, the place to have high-resolution scans done. You know, a lot of people now are shooting analog. They're using a high-resolution scan. They're making digital negatives on an inkjet. Or maybe they're going straight to an inkjet output, but they're making digital negatives and they're printing contact prints. They're doing all the stuff you need to get a high-resolution scan. They're using an Aztec Premier, 8,000 PPI, adjustable aperture. They can give you scans that are basically grain-free. They can adjust it for every kind of film out there. This is crazy stuff going on with Lenny Iger and the guys at Iger Studios. Check them out, igerstudios.com. And, of course, Upstrap at upstrap-pro.com, the camera strap that will not slide off your shoulder. Our media partners, www.apug.org, the Analog Photography User Group, the place on the web for all things analog process. This is a great place to learn, to share information, to get tips and tricks, the community for analog photography. www.apug.org, and of course, our photographic philanthropy partner, George Eastman House International Museum of Photography and Film, www.geh.org, the place to go to find out about the history of traditional analog photography. These people are keeping this alive. They have over 7,000 cameras in the museum of everything that's ever been made, including the Hasselblads that were shot on the moon. You name it, they have the collection. This is a great way to help support. You can be a member of George Eastman House organization. They have a lot of great things going on, but this is something you can do to help give back to photography, to help keep traditional analog photography alive for generations to come. Definitely check them out, www.geh.org. This week on Inside Analog Photo, the legendary snowboard photographer, Cole Barish. Cole has been shooting since the age of 13. He began to define his vision when he was just a teenager. He is considered the world leader when it comes to snowboarding photography, probably definitely the most published and respected in the world of snowboarding. Magazine covers, catalogs, advertising campaigns flown all around the world have been in the most incredible locations. We're going to talk to Cole today about his use of film for his personal projects, still shooting film on a lot of commercial things, and just some of the stunning, beautiful photography that Cole's up to. Cole, how you doing today?
Good, thanks. How are you?
Good. Thanks for joining us here on Inside Analog Photo. Great to have you on the program to talk about yourself and your very cool photography. So, Cole, give us a little background on yourself. Let's talk about what you're shooting and what you're doing.
Well, basically, I am a photographer who specializes in the snowboarding industry, shooting action and portraits and the lifestyle of the subculture.
So, as being one of the premier snowboarding photographers here in the world, tell me about how Cole got involved in photography to start with. Let's go back a few years here. What made you want to go take photos?
Well, basically, when I was probably 13 or 14, I picked up my dad's Canon AE-1 and just started shooting and got really, really into it. And I was shooting as much as I could and kind of just messing up and learning from my mistakes and reading books and asking a lot of questions. And then since I kind of grew up snowboarding and surfing, I just started shooting snowboarding kind of naturally of my friends and stuff. And then I realized when I was 16 that I really wanted to be a photographer, and I wanted to be a snowboard photographer at least first. So a crew from back home, a few kids that were aspiring to be pro snowboarders, and I, we kind of went out west together. Somehow convinced our parents to let us leave home at 16, all do homeschool together, and move out to California to try and make this thing go full potential.
Wow, how did you actually convince them to let you guys split being 16 and just say, later, man, we're going to go snowboard, take pictures?
I don't really know. I kind of set it up with the homeschool academy that I was going to take. And my dad made it pretty clear. He's like, all right, son, you're going to screw up once, then you're coming back home. And if your grades slip at all, then you're coming back home. So it's all in your hands. So basically, we did it. We're shooting and snowboarding and working pretty hard during the days, and then at night we would homeschool.
Wow. I mean, how hard would it be to go out and snowboard and shoot pictures and do all this stuff and then come home and not want to party?
I mean, yeah, it's hard. And you're working outside in the cold all day. It's exhausting and tiring. And the last thing you want to do is come back home, make dinner, and then open up a chemistry book.
And how many were there? Just four of you guys?
Yeah, there's probably like four or five of us. We split in between kind of two different places we live.
Being 16, I mean, how do you rent a house or an apartment or something?
Well, our parents co-signed it, and then we all had saved up money from working in summer jobs, and we were able to split a place. It was just like a pretty small condo, like two bedrooms, and we shared the rooms and stuff. Yeah, and we all pretty much busted ass and made it happen, and now some of my best friends that came out with me are now some of the best snowboarders today. So it's pretty cool to see all of us kind of branch out and make it together.
Now, you had a keen interest in snowboarding. I mean, are you snowboarding yourself besides doing this photography? So did it happen to work in, or was it just that you liked the subculture and you wanted to shoot pictures of this stuff?
No, I snowboard too. And I think to be involved in it, you really have to love it and have a passion for it. You got to have the mentality of it to kind of participate in it, I guess. So, yeah, I just basically shot freelance 16, 17. And then right when I was graduating at 18 in June, I remember I got a call from Forum Snowboards, and they said, we'd like to work with you. We want you to be our staff photographer. So this was huge to me, and I was just jumped out of my seat. I was so stoked. So for the next 3 years, I was Forum Snowboards staff photographer, and I pretty much followed their team around the globe, going out on shoots, shooting action, and then I shot portraits for editorial outlets. And then I worked on ad campaigns with them and branched out, started working with Oakley and Billabong a bit more. And then about 2 years ago, someone from Nike emailed me and explained to me that they were starting a brand, Nike Snowboarding, and wanted me to be pretty heavily involved. So when that opportunity came up, I kind of took the next step and went on with them pretty full time. That's when I worked on two or three pretty serious campaigns with them. I kept shooting their action as well for their internal needs, as well as documenting kind of while we're on the road and the subculture and the portraits, which is really what I love shooting and hope to branch out into.
So how are things been progressing here lately? I mean, are you still doing a lot of stuff for Nike? I mean, what are you working on now that's actually got you pretty happy?
Yeah, so I'm working with Nike. Again, this will be year three. My plan for this winter is going to be a bit different. Since I want to branch outside of snowboarding, I realize it's nowhere near going to happen overnight, and how much work I need to do and how I need to develop as a photographer. So I'm taking this winter, and basically I'm only going to be shooting snowboarding maybe 10 to 14 days a month. And then the other 2 weeks, I'm going to be doing test shoots and doing personal projects and just be shooting more and more stuff outside of snowboarding to get into my book and develop my style.
So let's talk about, I mean, you have all the snowboarding you're doing, and people would think that, wow, I'm only shooting 10 or 14 days a month. That still seems like a lot.
Oh, well, I mean, comparatively, for the past 3 winters, you're pretty much on the road 26, 27 days out of the month. You go from where it's snowing to where it's snowing. I mean, for instance, I've been up in Whistler, British Columbia, shooting the backcountry, long, long days, going deep on snowmobiles. I got back one day, I remember, and my friend called me from another crew in Stockholm, Sweden, and said it just snowed 2 feet there in the city, and their crew just flew in to shoot handrails, and they need a photographer. So that night, I booked my flight and went over there the next morning for 2.5 weeks. And so you're just constantly, constantly chasing the conditions around the world from basically end of November till June.
Wow. Sounds actually sort of fun, though.
Oh, yeah. It's a blast.
Well, it's tiring, too, I bet. Very tiring.
It's tiring. I mean, I travel with, I think it's 235 pounds of gear. I keep it consistent because I know that poundage because I fly the same airline and baggage all the time. It's a lot of equipment, and it's a lot of days out in the cold working in sub-freezing temperatures and sometimes sub-zero temperatures. But you got to love it. I like working hard and working outside and going to new places, so I don't mind it, I guess.
So let's talk about your craziest trip you went on. Tell me your wildest place you went and shot something. Because I'm sure some of these guys probably go to the extreme deal to go snowboarding. So I'm sure there must have been somewhere that really took you out in the middle of nowhere. Helicopter trip. I mean, somewhere just out in the middle of craziness.
Well, each year in April, usually a crew goes and posts up in Haines, Alaska. And Haines is this tiny little fishing town, basically on the coast of southeast part of Alaska. And you go and you just sit and wait for the weather to cooperate. And storms are moving in so quickly and all the time. They really can't predict the weather there for more than 12 hours out. So you pretty much just wake up, look out the window, and if it's any kind of clear sky, you run to the helipad and you're going helying. Or if it's cloudy, you wait. And I've waited like 10 or 11 days in a row sometimes. But then when you get a 3 or 4 day window, it's unbelievable. You're going out on just the biggest and most vast peaks, and you're out in the wilderness, you know, and you're getting dropped off with a crew. I mean, your crew, which consists of 3 snowboarders, a cinematographer, and your guide. And the heli's going, and it's cold, and the wind's blowing. You get dropped off on this peak, and you don't really know the snow conditions are 100% safe below you. And you get dropped off on this peak, and you're all huddled down in like a group, covering all your stuff, and the heli's taking off, road wash everywhere, and then boom, you look around, and you're just on top of this huge peak with mountains just on the horizon, a 360 view. And then it's time to go to work. So you're with your crew, and you follow your guide just about probably 100 feet each time down the slope. You take it really slow to be safe, and then you find something that everyone wants to shoot on. And sometimes you build a feature for up to 6 hours, you're shoveling a jump. And then you go and you find your angles, and then hopefully the sun is still out, or the wind didn't pick up, or something else bad happened, and you're able to shoot this jump and hopefully get shots, come back with some goods for the day. But being up in Alaska is just pretty amazing, and it's so gorgeous, and it's very humbling for sure.
When you guys go out on a gig like that, is the main purpose to get A, motion picture, and B, still images? I mean, do these guys go out there just to do it because it's cool and they bring you guys along? Why not? Let's get some cool pictures. Or is the whole trip meant to be, let's go shoot images?
Right. The objective of the whole trip is to go shoot images and motion pictures for editorial outlets and snowboard movies for marketing efforts for snowboard companies. Everyone's on a lot of pressure to come back with shots. Because basically at the end of the day, at the end of the trip, if you don't come back with some bangers, with some A-grade quality images, then you might not get sent there next year.
Right.
And the companies back in California or Washington or wherever they're based out of, they don't really care that there's nothing you could do if you were snowed in for 10 days and the weather didn't cooperate or the snow went to shit after one day. I mean, they don't really care. They want to see you make it happen. So you have to be pretty resourceful and pretty self-motivated with your crew to get it done and to make it happen.
So I know that because of editorial and what you guys are doing, you shoot digital, but then you shoot film for your personal stuff that really matters the most. So aside from the body, either being film or digital, let's talk about glass. What do you use when you shoot this kind of high-action, freezing cold, crazy stuff?
I've always shot Canon, and I think I'll always stay with Canon. So I shoot 70-200, a 50, which is my favorite lens. I shot a little bit with tilt shifts, and then I would shoot a bit with some wide angles, such as the 16-35 or the fisheye, all Canon lenses.
All Canon, all glass, all good stuff, of course. What do you think if you had one piece of glass to take with you? It's like, okay, you got one body and one glass. What are you taking glass-wise? What's going to be your pick, the 50?
For me, going on a trip, yeah, it would be the 50. They tend to call it the moneymaker lens, is the 70-200, if you want to come back with really good action shots.
So that's it, the 70-200 IS, and you're ready to rock.
I actually don't even use the IS. I recently got another 70-200 and sold my last one. Do the ISO is so good now in the new digital cameras, you're not really having to shoot at a slower shutter speed.
So you don't even bother with IS and don't let it drain your battery, just turn it off.
Yeah, exactly. And it's a little heavier and definitely a little more expensive. For me, I've been able to get away without it and been fine.
And that's what I was going to touch on metering when you're shooting in the snow. I mean, people would always think, how do you meter when you're in such a white, bright, super UV crazy environment? I mean, it's a challenge.
Yeah, I mean, since I grew up shooting film, you go off the sunny 16 rule. And I'm not sure if you're familiar with that. You actually probably are. Basically, the general rule is, if it's a bright sunny day out, at f16 at 1/25th of a second at 100 ISO, you know your image is going to be correctly exposed. So then you calculate the shutter speed and the aperture appropriately if you have that kind of setting. But if it's any kind of cloudiness, or if you're on a really bright, bright glacier or something, then I use an instant reading and varies and stuff. But I like to be pretty spot on in my metering with shooting, and I just don't like to have to change a lot of stuff in Photoshop. I also think the files really don't hold up as well if you have to change it more than a stop either way.
Oh, of course. So let's talk about your personal work with you shooting film. Now you're shooting, what, Leica 35, medium on a Blad. What are you doing with your personal work compared to the editorial? Because I know the editorial needs to get turned and out and done now. And nobody wants to try to shoot film in a hotel room and scan it and upload it and do whatever you need to do. So on your personal work, why do you like to shoot film over the digital? And then we'll talk about what you're shooting for film and gear and that stuff here in a minute.
Sure. I mean, for personal work, I really miss kind of the magic of film. And you don't know if you got it, basically, when you're shooting it. So with that being said, and that you have to keep shooting, you don't know if you got it, if that makes sense. It's not like you're seeing it on the viewfinder, okay, that looks good, I can stop shooting. Whereas you keep shooting and sometimes you get even something better. And I also miss the grain. Like, I like very gritty, grainy style film, specifically black and white. I had a few films pretty dialed in snowboarding. I would shoot Scala, push it one stop, put a red 25A on it, and I would get the look I want. Or I'd shoot Kodak T-Max 3200, pull it a stop, and then shoot it with a red 25A filter. Or I would shoot Kodak high-speed infrared film. I knew how to shoot that stuff in the snow, and it was almost kind of engraved in your style a bit. Now it's just, if I see something that I want to shoot black and white, I envision it black and white, I have to shoot it, look at it in color, download it on the monitor, and then spend like an hour, maybe less, on the computer trying to manipulate it so it looks like what I want it to look like, as if I were to have shot it on film. And the other part I liked about shooting film is because you're limited to the amount of exposures on each roll, as opposed to being able to shoot 1,000 photos on a memory card, it almost, for me, slows down my process a little bit. I try and focus a bit more on compositions and moments, as opposed to just kind of shooting so rapidly. And even when I try and slow down with digital, I still feel like sometimes I'm rushing shooting with digital. So that's maybe something that I just need to work on more and more. And the other last thing is just the feel. Like, when you have a Hasselblad in your hand, it feels solid. It's a workhorse, similar to the Leica or even the Canon EOS 1V. And then now you have these digital cameras, and they don't feel as solid in your hand. I don't know. I guess you could say I miss shooting film a little bit for sure.
How often do you get to shoot film when you're out doing these gigs? Do you always have a film body with you and load it up? Or is it something that when you're going to go off and you're not even working on an editorial package is when you'll break out your personal gear and do that?
Yeah, I mean, most of the time, it's kind of when I'm not even shooting anything in snowboarding. Unless I'm working on a specific project for in snowboarding specific to a film or a story. But most of the time, it's just kind of on the side of snowboarding stuff. So I'm shooting a bit more film.
So let's talk about your gear when you're shooting film. Of course, the Hasselblad.
Yeah, I also have 501 and an 80, and then I think it's a Leica M6 and a 35mm.
Very, very nice. And what's your favorite emulsion when you're out shooting?
Tri-X.
Wow, cool.
Yeah.
So that's it. So if you only had one gear to take, it would be the Blad and the Tri-X, huh?
Yep, no doubt about it.
Let's talk about this instant deal. I know you've been shooting a lot of the Fuji instant stuff. Let's talk about what you're doing with that.
Well, basically, I shot it all summer when I was back on Cape Cod. But just kind of my friends and kind of our daily adventures and whatever I kind of wanted to shoot, it was nice. And it's just a very nice medium that looks great together. I think my whole thing with shooting digital is it's so cool how easy it is to shoot. But, like, unless you're really printing these photos out, even, like, small, be looking at it collectively as a series or project. It just sits on your computer, and you don't ever really get to see that material. So with this Fuji Polaroid film, the Instant Ready or whatever, I was able to just be shooting kind of all the time, and Casey actually hooked me up with a bunch of boxes. So I was shooting a lot, and at the end of the summer, I put together just a little book of all the Polaroids. It's really cool how they look together, and it tells a pretty cool story. And you can kind of write on them and stuff, and it brings back kind of a sense of classicness, maybe. And the color of it, it's almost desaturated. The colors are very mute. They're not very bright, which is kind of nice. And the other thing is the exposure is all over the place. So you might get something totally funky that looks pretty rad, or you might have totally screwed it up. But yeah, it's a fun project that I like to continue shooting just because I'm switching up the mediums. But still making images and making compositions.
No, the Fuji Instax is a great camera, and like you said, you don't know what's going to happen. It's a crap shot a lot of times, and sometimes you get really muted, pastel, sort of overexposed stuff, and sometimes you get just stark, raven, crazy color, and it's everywhere in between. It's fun. You get a photograph right then. It's like, wow, look at this. You can hand it to someone. Here, man, this is cool.
Yeah,
it's probably really fun to actually document a summer gig and put all the stuff together in a little book when you're done. Actually tells a story. It's cool.
Yeah, I love it.
So they pretty much rank you as like the number one cat worldwide that's shooting snowboarding, winter sports. Are you looking forward to the Olympics coming up in Vancouver? Do you even deal with the Winter Olympic stuff?
I hope to go. I haven't lined up a job yet, but if one of the Nike athletes makes it, then I assume I'm probably going. But yeah, I'm pretty psyched to go. I hope I get to go. A lot of my friends are definitely Olympic hopefuls, so it's a pretty exciting year for them and for me, and it'll be awesome to see how everyone progresses, because that's what it's all about, the progression of the sport.
What about your thoughts on shooting other forms of photography besides snowboarding? I mean, is it something like, okay, I want to go shoot bobsledding? Do I want to shoot skiing? Do you want to stay in the winter deal? Would you rather go shoot football?
No, I mean, for me, basically, in snowboarding, I don't like to ever kind of shoot direct, fully zoomed-in action shots. When I'm shooting action snowboarding, it's either very conceptually lit, or I try and bring more of an artistic compositions, a bit more pulled-back environmental, I guess, compositions in the action. What I really love shooting in everything in snowboarding are the portraits and the lifestyle of it. So that is what I want to move into. And maybe experiment shooting a few other sports, but probably conceptually lit sports and not on the sidelines of an NFL football game.
No, and I think when people go to your website and look at your work, you're right. I mean, it's very environmental and you're getting more of the whole picture. Like if you were standing there or even wider, and yes, there's a snowboarder that might be up in the upper right-hand corner of the picture small, but then you have this huge monster crazy landscape. It's really cool stuff.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, my whole goal is to bring the viewer into the environment. Whatever the environment is, whether it's out in the backcountry and someone's snowboarding off this crazy cliff, I want to bring them like right there. So I tend to try and put more foreground elements into the composition to involve that. Or it may be a down day in the hotel room. One guy's just playing guitar solo in front of the window, and there's gear all over the place, and there's pizza on the ground, a beer spill, and I want to tell that story and bring the viewer right into that environment.
I love the series you did called First Chair, Last Call.
Oh, yeah, Special Blend Out. Yeah, that was pretty funny.
No, it's great. I mean, it tells a story, though. Like you said, it's very lifestyle-ish, especially pro snowboarders.
Yeah, totally.
It's very, very cool. So one thing that you would like to do photographically that you haven't got to do, I mean, what is there that you would like to do as a photographer that you haven't really got to shoot yet? I mean, you've been doing all this world-class snowboarding, winter sports stuff going on and doing these portraits, working for the biggest companies in the industry, but what does Cole want to do that's just something different, or is there anything you want to do that's crazy?
Well, I just finished up a personal project called Snow Silo. It was a series of snowboarding shots that are silhouettes. So basically, what I did was I brought a studio into the environment in snowboarding, out on location, and shot different features of snowboarding in front of this huge white background at night. And at first, I was kind of experimenting with bringing a white seamless background around. But one, it's not big enough. And two, it's windy up there often. So it got ripped very easily. So we figured out we need something tougher. So I researched in Hollywood and I bought a 20-foot by 20-foot canvas and built a metal frame for it. And we were lugging it around the hill to different locations and shooting snowboarding in front of it. And so that was something that I had been working on for 2 years. That was pretty important to me, and that just got wrapped up at the beginning of the summer. Besides that, in snowboarding, I really want to do a book. The working title right now is Snowboarding a Subculture. And after that, I'm ready to go on and move on to shooting more portraits full-time.
But still sticking within the lifestyle of the whole snowboarding scene?
No.
No, just do any kind of portraits?
Yeah, I want to go shoot stuff like Albert Watson or Peter Yang, whether it's for Rolling Stone or ESPN. Those guys are very influential to me, and I would dream of someday being at their level.
Yeah, Albert's got some pretty cool stuff shooting 8x10 chrome portraits. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And yeah, he's a perfect example of a guy that has a lot of different mediums within his style, which I think is pretty rad.
It is very cool. I guess it's just a matter of you finding some downtime to go do this, because like you said, it's coming up here on snow time here pretty quick.
Right, exactly. So I've scheduled my winter to basically only be on snow about 10 days a month compared to 25 or 28. So the other 15 to 20 days a month, I'm going to be able to shoot this stuff and go out and experiment.
So what's your plan on doing more portraits of? Are you looking for more environmental portraits that you'd like to do, or more studio sort of staged Albert Watson stuff? But then again, Albert's all over the board, so.
Yeah, to be honest with you, I want to keep continuing shooting both studio and portraits. So right now, I've just been spending this past few weeks coming up with two lists, basically. The first list is more test shoots that are more advertising and commercially driven that I want to go out and shoot, specifically certain kinds of lighting. And then personal projects, ideas I've come up with for portrait projects that I want to go out and shoot. Whether it may be Hispanic that have been working at one Mexican restaurant for the past 15 years. I want to go shoot people that have recently gotten into car accidents and try and form a series out of that. I ultimately would want to shoot a series that delivers a story that benefits someone else besides me, that does some good, is what I really want to focus on for a series this year. And hopefully along the way, I'll be able to shoot a lot of different kind of work and really develop my style. So this year for me is going to be a very kind of developing year. And I'm not really expecting to be working like crazy amounts and getting tons of jobs, et cetera, et cetera. I just want to cover all my overhead, which I'll do by shooting snowboarding, and then the rest will be development time.
Right, because this is going to expand you as a photographer and as an artist. Like you said, I mean, how cool would it be to go shoot old school people that have been, like you said, working in a Mexican restaurant for 20 years?
Yeah, coming back to Southern California, I'm trying to identify people within this culture, trends or patterns that are of interest to me and I think have something to say. And I want to go out and shoot that and basically concept a series of that. So I guess that's quite different of shooting some guy in the backcountry going 30 feet off a cliff. But that's just what I want to do right now in my career and to keep pushing and learning.
No, this is very cool stuff. And I really appreciate you, Cole, taking some time to chat with us. Just unreal, beautiful snowboard photography, your portraits, all this stuff is great. And it's just so cool to see that you still have this connection to film and analog capture, and you like it better than digital. And it's just really cool to see you continue your craft and all this great stuff you're doing, buddy.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
There you go. Cole Barish, world's leading snowboard photographer. Very cool stuff going on with Cole. Been shooting for many, many years. Just beautiful photography, unbelievable locations. It's so cool that he's still shooting analog capture, at least for all his personal work, and just his love of film and his love of photography and all this great stuff he's doing. Just beautiful snowboard photography, winter sports, and now doing a lot of surf stuff. Just beautiful lifestyle photography from Cole. You definitely need to check out his website, www.colebarish.com. The Inside Analog Photography radio program is brought to you by Fujifilm, making life more colorful over at www.fujifilmusa.com. Our friends at Richard Photo Lab at richardphotolab.com. DR5 over at www.dr5.com. Iger Studios over at igerstudios.com. Upstrap at upstrap-pro.com. And of course, our media partners, APUG, the Analog Photography User Group, over at www.apug.org. Our photography philanthropy partners, George Eastman House International Museum of Photography and Film over at www.geh.org. I've been your host, Scott Shepard, here on Inside Analog Photography Radio. We'll be back next week with more great analog photography.